Hey everyone, and welcome to this, the best edition of the Snake Oilers podcast series we have ever done here at Risky Biz HQ. My name is Patrick Gray, and over the next 45 minutes or so, you're going to hear about three different technology companies offering various products. At least one of the three is going to be very useful to you in your organization, which one, of course, depends on, you know, the job that you do and the organization that you work in. This isn't the regular weekly Risky Business News podcast. This is Snake Oilers, where we talk tech with vendors. The obvious disclaimer applies here. Everyone you hear on Snake Oilers paid to be here. But believe me when I say this is actually the best collection of tech we've ever had in one of these Snake Oilers podcasts, or at least like the most useful tech. First up, we'll be hearing from CMD, a new company. They make killer software for Linux that lets you lock down account actions, not permissions, actions. Do all the default and service accounts that you have to run on your Linux fleet terrify you? Well, this is a solution for that. And there's a visibility component there too. A lot of people who are dealing with day in, day out, you know, Linux fleet issues, they're going to love CMD. Then we'll be hearing from AlphaSock. When we last spoke to them, they were just doing domain-based analytics for companies, but they've expanded their tech and now offer IP-based and HTTP request-based analytics as well. You can deploy them as a Splunk app or hook up to their API any other way you want. They are offering free trials, but even when you're paying for the service, it's actually pretty affordable. The brain behind AlphaSock is Chris McNabb, who used to run incident response at ISEC Partners, then later NCC Group. He's seen how the planes crash into the mountains, folks, and he has created a product that performs eminently sensible analysis in near real time on your traffic and metadata to alert you to badness. So don't miss that one. And then finally, we'll be hearing from Nucleus. This is a new company, and if your job is managing vulnerabilities and vuln scanning in your org, then straight up just like skip now. Skip right now to the Nucleus interview. They have created a web app, and essentially what it does is normalizes vulnerability scanning information. It'll take outputs from SNCC, Rapid7, Checkmarks, NetSparker, OpenVAS, TwistLock, Fortify, BurpSuite, Nessus, Qualys, Acunetics, and others. It'll ingest all of that information, normalize it into like a single pane of glass. God, I nearly choked saying that. But then you can plumb those alerts through to the right people through a multitude of different ticketing systems. You can Jira it, you can Slack it, whatever you want. So, you know, right straight up, if you are a vuln manager and you're stuck in the seventh layer of SharePoint or spreadsheet vulnerability management hell, this is a solution to your problems. You will weep salty tears of relief and joy when you hear Scott Kufa later on telling us all about Nucleus, and there are free trials available of that one as well. But first up, we are going to hear from Jake King over at CMD. I've gotten to know Jake a little over the last few years. He's a listener of the podcast. He's also an Australian who's based in Canada, and he is the co-founder of a company called CMD. CMD is a Linux security tool that is designed to better secure Linux fleets. In essence, what the tool does is twofold. First up, it provides excellent visibility into account actions, you know, what accounts are doing, what your Linux accounts are doing. And then it gives you the power to actually restrict what accounts can do. It can even restrict root, right? Now, as a lot of people running cloud-based infrastructure already know, sometimes you're kind of lumped with some high-privilege accounts that you can't just nuke off your boxes. But with this, you can lock those accounts down. And as you'll hear, lots of CMD customers are finding novel ways to apply this tech. Jake's got a really good example in here around firewall rule changes. CMD has just taken $15 million from Google Ventures, and it is my personal belief that they are on the fast track to somewhere. So here is CMD co-founder Jake King talking about CMD.
We started to look at some of the problems associated with authentication and authorization for Linux systems and decided to take a bit of a different approach at seeing how we could lock down workloads in cloud and in data center. We focused on real problems when it came to securing Linux and thought that a lot of the controls that were out there today were a little bit limiting. We built an agent, which is deployed in a pretty lightweight sense, and focused on the ability to make that easy to control and easy to understand for security teams and operations teams. And fundamentally, the technology has been built in a pretty short stint. We've come to market pretty recently and announced some great funding news as well.
So you've built an agent with the purpose of securing Linux, but like, what does that mean? What does your agent do? And what are these specific problems that you're trying to solve?
Yeah, we started to take a look at how people were defending Linux systems. And a lot of the time it came down to implementing, you know, access controls to the host itself. So authorization was a bit of a second thought. We like to think of authentication being where a lot of companies stop when it comes to deploying access to the fleets of servers they have in cloud. And when we started to take a bit of a deeper look at the problems that were being faced by security teams, a lot of the time it came down to attribution of people's activity or kind of trying to gate very sensitive actions on these systems. And it always boiled down to humans accessing fleets. So we started by implementing a really clever flight recording technology where we get a really clear picture of what was going on with user-initiated sessions in Linux. And then took a bit of a different approach to trying to control that activity by not just looking at the login to the system being the only point of authentication authorization, but looking at the commands and executions themselves. So being able to be a bit of an engine like if this or that for the command line. If we see an execution that's sensitive, we can ask a question about that execution before we allow it to occur. A really simple example is tying something like Duo to a Vault unlock from the Vault HashiCorp product. Something that people are using the technology for today.
And you can even like totally bottleneck like anything sudo, right?
Yeah. So we sit in a place in the system that allows us to control even root executions. And it gives us a really flexible approach to how we lock down the workload. So for example, a lot of cloud deployed instances that run, you know, pretty industry standard variants of Linux are going to come preloaded with some shared accounts or shared access. You know, your Ubuntu user for Ubuntu deployed in AWS or EC2 user deployed into their EC2 Linux AMIs. And we wanted to think about ways to control that access because they do have very privileged access to the system. So the technology allows you to constrain even root from performing executions. And it's built into the daemon in such a way that allows us to control that on the fly. So you can change the policies even when people are logged into sessions without forcing them to log out, log back in with new permissions, or you know even restart the system. So it doesn't require any kind of high friction on that front.
So fundamentally, what we're talking about here is an agent that allows individual tasks and commands to be authorized, and you've built like an authorization layer in addition to typical like user account permissions.
That's exactly right. So we can augment both native, the permissions that you've already configured natively within the OS, and actually add and extend on top of them with the tools that the DevOps, the DevOps engineers in your environment are going to be using already. So any of the standard work, communication tools like Slack can be leveraged to notify you about sensitive events or even authorize sensitive events, or something like Duo or Ubico tokens being used to actually authorize very specific executions themselves.
I even saw you had a iOS app, don't you, where you can actually pipe yes, no, for certain sudo requests, like on your phone, or have you been that?
We've actually done it through Duo. So we do some really interesting integrations with the Duo application right now, and it involves some creative thinking about how we use their API. So we've got a really great example of a trigger that a lot of our clients use today, whereby we can actually send a notification to the user logged into the system and request them for approval to run, say sudo a sudo su session through Duo. We do that with all of Duo's existing workflows as well. So if you've already deployed Duo to your environment and you're using those tokens maybe with something like libduo, we can extend a lot of that functionality into the command service itself and sometimes actually replace the libduo agent itself for login to the system. We can make it pretty flexible if you've got some constraints around deploying PAM modules or PAM agents on the system that can sometimes be a little bit hard to do and hard to manage in the long run.
We've talked about what you do, but why do we want to do this, right? It seems like a fairly simple function, just from a wrapping your head around it point of view, but what are the problems that it actually solves?
Realistically, it starts by providing that flight recorder capability for a lot of companies in the first place. So a lot of companies will come and speak to
and are you piping adding that out like syslog sort of style, or
We can do it in a couple of different ways. We've got a user interface that we display session data and command data itself in really fine granularity, even more so than kind of tools like AuditD can pull, but at a pretty lightweight volume. but we pipe it to our console, but we also kind of integrate it with different services like, you know, GCS buckets or S3 storage. So you can pull that into something like Splunk pretty easily. And we let you retain that data forever as long as you want to in your own buckets. Our console has the ability to surface this data, and it's providing a hybrid control service. So anything you can see within our console, you can actually control. And that's really where a lot of the control starts to come into play for a lot of the companies we work with today. They've had a really hard time trying to manage all of these different solutions around who's doing what and how are they doing it, and why are they doing it. We can provide the answers to who, what, and why, and then provide the control surface to actually control when they're allowed to do it.
You also like an alternative directory? You know, is that how it works? Do you handle the provisioning and whatnot?
No, we don't handle any provisioning. We tend to find that there's so many different ways that people are already accessing these fleets of servers. It tends to be kind of, you know, shouting into a very loud room already. When we looked at, you know, how accounts are provisioned in most cloud workloads, a lot of people are leveraging the cloud service provider's ability to deploy those accounts during bootstrap or, you know, that bootstrap process. We're actually finding also a lot of companies are trying to minimize the amount of accounts that have access to very sensitive environments, and they are falling back to, you know, pretty specific, you know, environment-specific accounts that they'll use to maintain those systems. We look at the existing accounts on the host already and provide that control surface for you. The power really comes into the fact that if you are following some, you know, maybe not so best practices, but bad practices when it comes to account segregation or account management, we can really help you out and bring things like attribution of sessions, even through shared accounts in, you know, a couple of minutes with a deployment. It's not rocket science, and it's pretty simple.
So walk me through that. Walk me through that and tell me who the ideal customer is for you. Like, what is the situation that they have to be in where they just say, my God, I need this? Because I can guarantee you that, you know, there's going to be some of them.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of the organizations we've helped out are either in a really great state of maturity. They've got named accounts. They've, you know, implemented policies around key management, certificate management, and all the rest of it. But they're looking to add controls in a real-time effect to look at really sensitive actions, you know, and that's really tying down to implementing best practices or compliance into that very mature environment. On the other side of the spectrum, we tend to find companies that have a less than mature state of deployment can really take advantage of that flight recording technology we provide to not only record actions that are happening in production and the commands that are being typed, the executions being made, the files being modified, the changes being made to this fleet, but actually start to move the needle to building a better practice around accessing that fleet.
And so you've got the super mature people who are hyper paranoid, then you got the people where everything's on fire and they need something to put out the flames.
Yeah, exactly. It's the more general approach to doing so. It's not necessarily a whitelist. It's not a blacklist unless you want it to be. It's really kind of something in between. The gray lists is what a few of the folks in sales tend to call it, but I don't really like that terminology.
Yeah, so I guess this is really just about more granular control of various actions. But I'm guessing, though, that you have, you know, I mean, it would ship with a sort of template of stuff that's like blocked by default or kicked up to 2FA for default, right? So this is like kind of like a better permissions, you know, because Linux permissions are hard, right? Like they are. So if you've got something like this with default permissions or authentication and authorization options around, you know, certain risky actions, that's going to get you a long way out of the gate, right?
Absolutely. Just highlighting sensitive actions around configuration changes or, you know, very sensitive user modification actions or, you know, kind of process modification actions can really provide companies a great picture of what's actually going on in the fleet. And you can escalate the way that policy reacts in the environment very, very easily. So a lot of the templates we deploy start off with simple alerts. Hey, we're going to tell you when things tend to go wrong or where there might be suspicious or unusual behavior going on in the fleet. And you can tune them and fine tune them to the, you know, to the liking of your environment. So
there's a control element, but there's also a very much a detection element here from what you're saying.
Absolutely. We like to think a lot of companies that are leveraging the technology in some ways today are actually seeing the events occur and being able to react to that event occurring as opposed to trying to clean up the mess after. when we implemented the technology for some of our very early clients, a lot of them were just leveraging the alert engine to just tell them when people were doing the wrong thing. Now they're leveraging the alert engine to, you know, get an approval sent to an operations team about restarting a service. It's really improving workflows and actually improving the speed that people can get things done in production, but creating a bit of a barrier around the things that they probably should not be doing. And for us, it's been pretty effective to learn alongside them and build some really amazing policies that have helped people out in some sticky situations.
Now, I mean, who are you competing with here? Is it the people who are making god-awful PAM modules and stuff like that? Like, is that kind of the competition?
To an extent, we tend to find we're coming across different kind of observability tools, session recording tools that were, you know, built for massive enterprise that are getting kind of munged into cloud environments. And it has,
yeah, you'd
said,
have a lot of like those general like legacy visibility apps, right? That are just clunky
right.
as hell.
Yeah, exactly. And I think where we've been able to improve the experience for the, you know, the operations team is by providing a really clear picture of what's going on in a language that they understand. Even in our session view inside our console, it represents exactly as the shell would look like to the user actually running that shell. So even if you've got junior analysts or analysts that may be kind of emerging into kind of that intermediate analyst role, they can actually see what, you know, the intent was behind the action and get the context rather than just kind of make assumptions and grep through audit D logs or run some really complex Splunk queries.
So give me an example of one alert that you could spit out that would tell someone something has gone seriously wrong.
Yeah, we actually came across this a couple of weeks ago with a proof of concept we were rolling out, and it was an interesting
case.
They're
always the best, aren't they, when you're rolling out a proof of concept and it's like, it turns out to be super
interesting
useful.
Things. Yeah, we had a customer ask, hey, we've got you know, state where in a production environment, two services stop talking to each other, and the only thing we can pin it down to is something on the network. Hey, can you help us find the last actions that changed a firewall state? And for that specific distribution, it was just looking at UFW on the host. Turned out that one of the engineers was trying to troubleshoot to see if the file was actually causing the problem in the first place. Ended up enabling that firewall, and we were able to pinpoint it in a couple of minutes with them in a console and create some logic around it to prevent that firewall being enabled, disabled, or changed in production when the workload was running. So it just goes through an authorization phase, pops a notification into a Slack channel for them, and provides some really clear picture around it. Some more interesting cases that we've come across recently are, you know, hosts that are running Docker containers where you've got administrative actions being performed on those containers within that environment, within that host. For a long time, companies have been managing access to containers or, you know, kind of shell access to containers through things like Kubernetes consoles. And you can create some really granular policies around that. But if you've got access to that underlying fleet running those kube pods, you can actually run Docker executions into the containers pretty easily with a couple of command line flags. So we created some policies for another client that was trying to lock down access to containers, even though their administrators had access to the hosts. And we were able to create some really creative rules to not only notify them when people were trying to do it, but actually ask the question as to why.
What are you doing, dude? So it's like that whole thing about like, this has been reported to the administrator. Like this will actually report things to the administrator.
That's actually right. Yeah. It's that old message we saw in, you know, the cookies egg a million years ago.
All right, Jake King, thank you very much. And, you know, you guys have signed up as a sponsor for some weekly shows, which I'm very excited about. You know, it's been great watching this thing get there, right? Because I know you've been working very hard on this for a few years, and now it looks like you're in the fun part of a startup where you've got your product, you've got the money now to take it to market, and you know, you've gone through that proof of concept phase. I'm actually excited about this. I think it's about time we saw some modern security tools for Linux. So I'm going to straight off the bat wish you the best of luck, and I'll be talking to you soon in the weekly slots. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Pat.
That was Jake King from CMD there, and you can find them at cmd.com. And I think they are going to make $1 squillion just quietly. So yeah, please remember the little people, Jake. Remember us. Remember us. And yeah, if you're running a lot of Linux boxes, you know, just really do go check this out. They used to have a promo video on their website that was pretty mind-blowing, but unfortunately, I don't think it's there anymore. But yeah, come on, CMD, bring back the videos. They were very cool. Now, the last vendor today is Nucleus. I mentioned them in the intro to the podcast. Do make sure you hang around for that one if you're working in vulnerability management. But before that, and right now, we're going to check in with AlphaSock so they can tell us about their latest offering. AlphaSock is one of those companies that's just doing good, conceptually simple stuff. So many so-called threat intelligence products essentially just do pattern matching against known bad domains and IPs. It is a blacklist approach, and hey, that's great. You should do that. But many of these products don't even do even a cursory analysis on DNS lookups and IP metadata, and that is where AlphaSock comes in. They take your DNS lookups, your IP metadata, your HTTP requests, and they perform analysis on those on that data in near real time, then feed you alerting based on this stuff. Now, most of AlphaSock's customers are Splunk users. So if you are a Splunk user, you can literally go right now while you listen to this interview and provision yourself a free trial key straight up. Like, all of AlphaSock's documentation is online, as is its pricing. I've linked through to that documentation in the show notes. And yeah, considering the value they deliver, this is a really well-priced product. It's actually quite cheap, surprisingly, I think. Chris McNabb is the AlphaSock founder, but before that, he ran incident response at ISEC Partners and then NCC Group later on. So yeah, look, you know, what Chris has done here is taken some incident response workflow and turned it into a detection methodology. In this interview, he explains why he's broadened AlphaSock's offering to include more than just DNS analytics. So here's Chris McNabb.
One of the challenges for us with DNS analytics was that we were then naturally missing events and interesting indicators on other layers. So, for example, with DNS analytics, we weren't able to flag Tor circuits or kind of straight IP connections to command and control infrastructure. And then as well, you know, from an HTTP perspective, we weren't able to flag, actually dig into the HTTP request itself, look at, you know, the method that was being used, whether it was a weird, extension for the file that was being downloaded, you know, post request or whatever it was. So for sure, we've just been working over the last couple of years now to, you know, extend the coverage and identify, you know, threats and anomalies across different layers.
Now, when you say HTTP, I'm guessing you're getting a feed of requests that are coming from like TLS proxies as well. So you're not, that's not a blind spot for you?
Yeah, correct. So most of our customers are using Splunk. So material will come up into their Splunk environment from, you know, on the DNS side, it will be, you know, domain controllers, kind of DNS infrastructure like info blocks. On the IP side, it will then be maybe like Bro IDS or full packet capture or firewall logs that are coming up. And then from the HTTP side, yeah, it could be like Zscaler, Bluecoat proxies, any kind of, HTTP aggregation point.
Now, we should just point out how this works, right? Essentially, you run an API, you plumb through this information, and then you send back essentially like a badness score. I mean, it is that simple, isn't it?
Yeah. So we operate a what we call the AlphaSock Analytics Engine. The Analytics Engine runs up in Google Cloud. It's just an elastic, scalable API that we operate. And then fundamentally, it just speaks JSON. So our Splunk app, we have integrations for Elastic and all kinds of, you know, core light sensors and all kinds of other telemetry sources. That material makes its way up into the API. So DNS events, IP connection events, you know, source IP, source port, dest IP, dest port, timestamp, you know, bytes in, bytes out, and then HTTP events. All of that makes its way up into the API. We then score that material, perform all kinds of layered analytics that I'm sure we'll get into later in the podcast. And then we then generate alerts and kind of, signals that then make their way back down into the customer environment. If you're using the Splunk app, that all gets rendered very cleanly within Splunk. However, if you're using anything else, essentially, whether it was, you know, QRadar, Alien Vault, whatever the SIM may be, we can also provide those alerts in JSON format, and you can then integrate them into your existing SOC.
Okay, so let's talk about those analytics, right? Because one thing that is conspicuously absent from your marketing is any mention of advanced artificial intelligence or machine learning. And, you know, look, I mean, one of the things I like about AlphaSock, right? You've got a long background. You had a long background in incident response. You have seen how the planes crash into the mountain, right? And unpicking that, you don't necessarily need an artificial intelligence cyber threat engine to be able to sort of figure out what's gone wrong there. I mean, that seems to be what's informed, you know, the way that you've built these analytics. It's all pretty simple stuff.
And you know, a difference between AlphaSock and a lot of other kind of cyber AI, machine learning, user behavior analytics companies is that we originally actually bootstrapped the company back in 2013, picked up our first customer, worked with them to actually build something that gave them true value and useful alerts. And then ever since, we've just been improving and iterating upon the product. So really, you know, a good way of thinking about it is that our customers then have actually become our investors for the most part. So because of that, we've then just naturally been, you know, improving the product for the customers and producing all kinds of useful kind of use cases without needing to drill too heavily into, you know, machine learning or AI. That's not to say that we don't have classifiers that are bordering on those technologies, but from like a marketing perspective, we're really allergic to kind of, you know, referring to cyber or AI or any of these other buzzwords within.
I think we should just replace discussions of machine learning with discussions of, you know, sort of complicated statistics models, I think is a better way to describe it. So let's talk about some of the analytics that you're doing. I mean, one thing that you're flagging on is like communication with young domains. I mean, that would be one of the simplest ones for people to understand.
Yeah. So, and even that one, actually, virtually every other security tool that I've seen in recent years is built and engineered in such a way that it will ingest threat feed information and threat intelligence from like a third party, almost like a kind of indicator list. And then it will be performing one-dimensional correlation where you just take the raw data, whether it's, you know, web requests or DNS requests or IP events, you correlate against the feed, and then you throw the shit against the wall, you kind of see what sticks.
So that's
the kind of the existing kind of legacy way of processing material. What we've done at AlphaSock is turned that on its head, and so even actually this use case that you're highlighting here, which is, you know, flagging, you know, beaconing traffic to a young suspicious domain. If we actually unpack that, there are a ton of classifiers beneath the surface that I can dig into. So the first one is then, we have like a timing analysis classifier where for every single source destination pair, we then track the timestamps of the requests over up to a 7-day period. And if the timing deltas start to fall into a regular pattern, we'll then flag that as beaconing, and we'll kind of upgrade the severity or the kind of interest level around the signal from maybe like an informational to a low severity. And then we are then also whoizing tens of thousands of domains every day. So when we see domains and DNS material coming into the engine, and if we haven't seen a domain before, we'll actually reach out, who is the domain, to then understand whether it's young or old, you know, figure out the creation date for the domain, who it's registered by, which country they were in. And then if that domain is less than 60 days old, let's say, we then will upgrade the severity again from, let's say, low to medium. So something like beaconing to a suspicious young domain. Under the surface, there are two or three classifiers and steps, kind of almost like worker steps that are being performed. If you were to try and do that work within a traditional SIM, whether it was, you know, Splunk proper or, you know, ArcSight or AlienVault or whatever the product is, because those products aren't built in that way, it's just not possible to kind of perform this active work on the fly.
Well, and some of them are building like automators and orchestrators where you can drill down into that sort of stuff, but you have to initiate that action, right? This is just automatic, right? It's. I mean, you know, the Rich Mogul actually used the term on Twitter some time ago. He described some product as being a blue collar security tool, which I really like because it's you know, they're often my favorite approaches to InfoSec challenges as well, are the simple ones that just work. They don't need to be particularly complicated. They're just, you know, as I mentioned before, you've got a background in IR, and I'm guessing on a lot of gigs, you would have to, you know, you would eventually hit on some domain, and the reason you would know it's shady is because of these reasons that you mentioned. You know, you would say, well, that's a young domain, and then you're looking for, you know, you're doing certain timing analysis on it, and then, hey, okay, this has given me something to work with here. I mean, automating that at the time that this is all happening, it's not that hard. Okay. In theory, it's not that hard, but I'm not the one. As I've discovered through working with AssetNote, you know, some of the simple stuff can be quite complicated. But yeah, you get where I'm coming from, I'm sure.
Precisely. So you and I, Patrick, we can agree that it's not difficult and this isn't anything special. But you would be surprised, I'm sure, how difficult this is for security teams at scale. So what I've found then, you know, through doing the incident response work I was doing previously, you know, chasing Russian GRU agents through corporate networks and so on and so on, it was very clear to me that the existing kind of, you know, SIM products that were being used by these teams, they were producing, you know, useful and interesting indicators and alerts, but
they were missing a lot as well, right?
But yeah, and as we're now getting into with this thread that we're currently on, there was then a need for the security operations center to be staffed with a number of analysts that would then take that material, reach out, you know, look up the domain on VirusTotal, look it up on, you know, passive DNS, do all kinds of additional manual steps in order to form an opinion as to whether a domain or a destination or certain traffic pattern was good, bad, or ugly. It's as simple as, you know, automating that and producing a refined result to the analyst, and that really is what we're doing at AlphaSock. If you distill our work all the way down to its kind of fundamental truth, we really are then performing this kind of multidimensional analytics on the fly in near real time, and then we're producing, you know, this refined alert material that makes its way back down into the SOC. And actually a number of our customers are even taking this material now, feeding it straight into SOAR and orchestration, and even then freeing up the analyst where there's no need for there to be a human, you know, a human involved in the loop. So that's then the way this is hopefully moving into the future, where it just becomes similar to what Netflix have been doing for years with their FIDO kind of infrastructure that they've built out, which is all just, you know, a series of APIs talking to APIs, and everything kind of runs at scale, which also is what's happening at AWS and some other, you know, larger enterprises.
Last time we spoke, we were talking about, you know, DNS-based stuff. You're doing IP, as you mentioned, you're doing IP-based analytics now and the HTTP-based analytics. Can you give me just two ideas about, like, I'm guessing for the IP stuff, you're looking for beaconing and whatever, but what are some of the other indicators that you're looking for in IPs and, you know, HTTP traffic?
If we take the IP side first, if we see, for example, traffic from an address within an environment out to a destination using a strange port, so if it's using, I don't know, like port 1665 or 7777, we will then run that IP through sandboxing engines. So, you know, stuff like VirusTotal, Cisco ThreatGrid, you know, kind of sandboxing engines to then figure out if there are known malware samples associated with that destination. So again, in terms of like a layered approach, traffic to a destination that's not, you know, port 443 or port 80 is interesting, but not necessarily malicious. But then if we also have a positive score from, you know, the sandboxing engines, then that is interesting. And then also we have all kinds of other third-party APIs that we're using, where we're even running things through, you know, Google Safe Browsing. We're correlating on the DNS side. We're correlating domains against, you know, Quad9 and the other DNS threat blocking providers. And then finally, you know, a new set of features that we've only been building out over the last month or so now is where we will actually proactively reach out to these services and try to fingerprint them out ourselves. So if it's a web service, we can then figure out whether it's returning like an Open Directory listing, which is then interesting, or whether it's like a WordPress or Joomla or Drupal service.
And hang on the HTTP request side, what are you doing there?
So we're primarily looking at GET and POST requests. On the GET side, if we see an HTTP GET of a file with an odd extension, so whether it's, you know, .lnk or .scr or .hta or some kind of strange looking, you know, potentially malicious extension, we then upgrade that from, you know, as I said, like an informational to a low.
But I can see where you said posts. I mean, that's where it's going to get interesting, is when you start seeing one agent, you know, one endpoint doing a load of posts, like that's not good.
Absolutely. So again, from like a behavioral perspective, we're looking at, you know, volume of requests. So if we then see posts to maybe a young domain and hooking this back into the DNS, so if a domain is young, it has a suspicious TLD like .xyz, and then it has a positive sandbox engine score, then we will upgrade that to
This is all making sense. Sorry I'm pushing you here, but we're running out of time. And I do want the listeners to understand that in enterprise terms, if you're the sort of organization that has a SOC is an expensive thing. The cost of rolling this out is bordering on trivial. Can you tell us how much this costs?
There are a few things we're quite proud about. The first is that we don't have any mention of cyber on the website. The second is there's no mention of AI or machine learning on the website. And then the third is that our pricing is actually public. It's within the documentation. The way that we price this is just based on the size of the environment. And it starts off at $8 per endpoint per year. So it's very, you know, very cheap. If you have an environment with, you know, 200 endpoints, that's looking like a $1,600 investment. From an evaluation perspective, the one thing to mention there is that the product and the engine itself is completely free and unrestricted to evaluate for 30 days. So you can use our various integrations, self-provision a key. There's no need to talk to any salespeople. And then you can start evaluating the analytics and actually see whether it does what it says on the tin or not.
Well, Chris McNabb, thank you very much for joining us. It's great to hear what you've been up to over the last couple of years in terms of building this thing out. People who are interested can go to alphasoc.com/splunk to get some more information there. But yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you back on the show, and I wish you the best of luck with it.
That's great. Thanks, Patrick.
That was Chris McNabb there, and I have linked through to AlphaSock's documentation in the show notes for this podcast. So if you want to go and provision yourself a free trial, you could do that yourself. Just go for it. If you're a Splunk user, I personally think it's a no-brainer to go give it a go. Plug it in, see what comes out. It is a free trial. Okay, our last snake oiler for this week is Nucleus. And this is one of those products that like a few percent of this audience is just going to, they're going to hear this interview and then they're just going to go out and buy it. Because it's one of those things that fills a gap very nicely. It's not rocket science. It's just an excellent productivity tool. So yeah, if you are a vulnerability program manager dealing with myriad vuln scanners and not just the network scanners, the Tenables and whatever, I mean web app scanners, software composition analysis tools, whatever. If you're someone who's trying to manage the output of all of these tools with some spreadsheet SharePoint horror show, well, no one would blame you for hating your life and your job right now. And Nucleus has a solution for that. Basically what they do is they ingest the output of all of these tools. You'll hear a roll call of which not even a comprehensive one, but a roll call of just how many tools they support. And yeah, it allows you to plumb through individual alerts out to the right people via ticketing systems, Slack, whatever. That's it. That's what they do. And this is the sort of stuff we love to promote on Risky Biz, stuff that actually solves real problems that people actually have in their day jobs. Anyway, here is Nucleus co-founder Scott Kufer joining us to give us his best pitch for Nucleus.
Nucleus is a web application which was specifically designed to solve the problems that vulnerability management teams face on a daily basis. So what we do is we ingest the vulnerability scanning data from all of the vulnerability scanning tools that you use in your organization across the entire technology stack. So this can be anything from network scanners to web application scanners to API scanners, on and on. So what we do is we actually help you normalize the vulnerability findings into one place so that you can analyze them. We help you prioritize the findings so that you know which ones need to be fixed first. And then we automate and orchestrate the workflows that surround the actual management of those vulnerabilities.
Yeah, now the orchestration part is interesting. So we'll get into which particular technologies you support because there's quite a lot of them and you've ticked quite a few boxes there. But the idea that you can set this thing up as a connector so you know that you can sort of have rules for your different alerts, like depending on where the alert has popped up, you can sort of determine which team it needs to go to, that sort of stuff. I mean, that's a big selling point for you guys, isn't it?
Absolutely. So one of the big things that a lot of our clients like about Nucleus is that they can use it in a multitude of ways, right? So on the one hand, you can use it as an analyst workbench to actually analyze and figure out what needs to be fixed first. But at the same time, you can also have Nucleus running in the background almost as a connector between all of your different scanning tools and then basically connecting them to the ticketing systems that you're using to actually remediate vulnerabilities. So you can set this up. Yep.
So I think this is a good time to actually mention which technologies you support, right? Because you've spoken about, you know, connecting things, right? And that can be a little bit abstract, right. But you know, you support things like Nessus, NetSparker, NetSpose. What else? Because there's quite a few on that side of the equation, right?
Absolutely. So we support basically network security scanners, DAST, SAST, IAST, SCA, open source vulnerability analysis, containers, cloud, basically all of the vulnerability scanning type technologies that you would use in your organization or that you would find for your different teams.
All right. So let's name some of them. Let's just do a bit of a roll call.
Sure. So Sneak, Rapid7, Twistlock, Checkmarks, Fortify, NetSparker, OpenVAS, Burp Suites, Nessus. Did I already mention Nessus? Qualys, Qualys WAS, right? So each of the big three in network security, they do containers and compliance also. So we support that. We've got the Acunetics of the world. We also support custom data types. So if you have custom tools that you built in-house, you can actually format the output of those into our Nucleus schema and post that directly to us and basically build us into your CI/CD pipeline.
So that's why the reason I wanted you to do a roll call there is just because, like, I'm pretty impressed actually by just how many different things you support. But on the output side, I mean, which ticketing systems do you support? Because you support quite a few of them.
Yeah, so we actually support a variety of technologies on the output side also. So we integrate with Syslog, so things like Splunk, Graylog, those sorts of things. We also integrate with ticketing systems like Jira, ServiceNow, Samanage, and then also other ticketing systems that are more like issue trackers. So Bitbucket, Jira, GitHub, HipChat, Slack. Actually, they deprecated HipChat, so you can disregard that one. But yeah, so email, SMS. We basically support all of the mediums that you would need to be notified basically of your vulnerabilities, depending on your organizational structure.
Okay, so we've spoken about the types of data that you ingest. We've spoken about the types of ticketing, you know, systems and, you know, various forms of communication on the output side. So let's talk about why that might be useful, right? So can you give us a case study of a typical deployment? Maybe tell us, like, some of the problems that this actually solves for people.
Right, absolutely. So kind of at the core of a vulnerability management team, you're doing vulnerability assessments, right? And that's kind of the basis of a defensive cybersecurity program. Now, with the huge influx of technologies or the explosion of technologies that exist now, you have a multitude of tools and you may have a multitude of teams that are responsible for vulnerabilities in each of those categories. And they have no great way of actually sharing the information with each other in order to determine kind of what your total vulnerability risk picture is. So one of the biggest problems and really the way that most vulnerability teams do this is they actually run from Excel spreadsheets or PDF reports, and they throw those.
It's like an Excel spreadsheet and email nightmare normally, right?
Right, or the more commonly we see it thrown in a SharePoint somewhere, and then people check that out and make changes and then check it back in. So what we do is we actually ingest all of that data and normalize it and basically give you a standard place where everybody can go to get the information that they need. And then because we have all of that information kind of in one place and in a normalized format, we are able to essentially allow you to define rules that if the data meets certain criteria, it can be tasked automatically to users that are responsible for it. So the best example would be there is a web application that you're scanning with Checkmarks, and a SQL injection vulnerability comes up and that asset has particularly been tagged as a critical asset. Then as Nucleus is ingesting the vulnerability data for that scan, it will see this SQL injection vulnerability and then shoot it over to the Jira ticketing system that you have defined for those types of vulnerabilities. So we try to make it as granular as possible so that you can actually let Nucleus take care of all the administrative functionality for you.
Now, how much of a pain in the ass is it to set up though? Because that's the one thing I'd be worried about is, like, oh my God, I'm going to have to write a million rules.
So we basically have what we call dynamic rules where you can define the categories of how it works, right? So if you have an application owner, then you can say, if there's a critical vulnerability on an application, send it to its owner. So rather than saying you need to send a ticket to each individual person and tag each of those assets, you can do it in kind of a more abstract way that allows you to write less rules.
So it's really about going into the console and assigning responsibility for various types of bugs to different people, and then the categorization of those bugs is something that you do, you know, on the Nucleus side.
Correct. And then also we have the ability to pull that from the various tools. So a lot of the output that we get, so for example, I've used checkmarks a couple times. They actually have the owner of the application in the output. So we can pull some of that data from there also.
Now, I'm curious to know what the competitive landscape looks like here, because I can remember some products along similar lines from like, God, what were they called? The ones who were going to get bought by HP. I mean, I'm talking 15 years ago. There were a few companies doing sort of similar stuff that never really took off. What's the competitive landscape look like now, though, in 2019?
Well, it's very interesting that you ask that, because we actually have two classes of competitors that I would categorize them as. So the first is kind of your traditional vulnerability scanning vendor. So they do, you know, obviously the ones that are doing the scanning. The problem with them is that they don't really play well with others. So they don't allow you to analyze all of your data. So they argue that they're the best at everything. So that,
well, they say, we give you 360 degree visibility, right? It's like, if you use our products, which don't actually scan for all types of and classes of bugs, like Tenable's not going to be as useful as something like Snyk for doing software composition analysis, right?
Absolutely. It's never going to be as good at open source vulnerability analysis as Snyk is. And so even though they have some decent dashboards, those dashboards are pretty much useless when you're trying to, you know, abstract it out and evaluate your entire vulnerability risk.
Yeah.
And then
who's the second class?
Yeah, the second class are basically the categories we put them in are risk intelligence type platforms. So they're basically the vendors that try to do threat modeling to help you figure out what to fix first, which is good, but they really lack the ability to analyze the vulnerability data in such a way and at the correct level to actually be useful for analysts, right? So they have that kind of high level view, which is not extensible for the actual analysts to do their job.
No, it's a little bit fancy, right? This is more of a getting shit done product.
Absolutely. We kind of split the middle between the two is what we like to say. So we provide all the analysis capabilities from your traditional scanning vendor console, except across all of your technologies. And then we also provide the ability to prioritize and, you know, help you figure out what to fix first and to do some of that threat modeling on the side as well.
Okay, Scott Kufer, thank you very much for joining us to give us a rundown on Nucleus. I believe that anyone who's interested in this product can go and trial it for free for a couple of weeks and really get a feel for how it all works. People can head over into the show notes for this podcast to check out a link to your website. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Patrick. Appreciate it.
That was Scott Kufer from Nucleus there. And yeah, you can trial Nucleus for free as well. I've linked through in this week's show notes. Oh, and one thing, Scott did get in touch with me afterwards to say that being able to trivially assign individual application owners through their system, that is actually a couple of months away. You can still do the same thing, but with more complicated rules. The mega easy, stupid, clicky, clicky, pointy rule set feature is coming later. But yeah, I am a big fan of Nucleus, as you can tell. In fact, I'm a big fan of all three of the vendors in this Snake Oilers. I do hope you all got something valuable out of that as well. But yeah, that is it for this edition of Oilers. Part 2 will be running, I think, next week. But I will be back before then with another weekly show. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.